A sleepless night in Kyiv, courtesy of Moscow, after what sounds a lot like a threat from Washington.
I will say that I think Russia is ready, and a lot of people said Russia wanted to go for the whole thing. And I think we have a deal with Russia. We have to get a deal with Zelensky, and I hope that Zelensky, I thought it might be easier to deal with Zelensky. So far, it's been harder.
The president of the United States is pressure on Ukraine to sign on the dotted line, followed by Vladimir Putin's deadliest nighttime raids on Kyiv in months. How does Ukraine's president react? And what about European allies? What will they do if Ukraine's coerced into giving up not only its claim to the Crimean Peninsula, but all the territory currently occupied by Russian invaders? Before heading to Rome Saturday and to a papal funeral that's to feature interested parties, Ukraine's president in South Africa this Thursday. South Africa, host of the next G20 summit, key member of the BRICS Club of Emerging Powers. How to convince the global south and push back against disinformation, especially when some of that disinformation is being repeated by the White House. Today in the France 24 debate, has Trump made Zelensky an offer he can't refuse? Joining us from the Ukrainian capital, Daria Kalinyuk, executive director of the advocacy group, the Anti-Corruption Action Center. Thank you for being with us. Jim Townsend is former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for European and NATO Policy. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
Welcome back as well to former French Ambassador to Russia, Jean de Grignesti. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
And Samantha de Bendern, Associate Fellow at the Chatham House Think Tank.
Good evening.
How are things?
Well, you know, it's depressing to wake up in the morning and see another really, really bad bombardment on Kyiv. And 3 years in, it's difficult to get used to.
Let's talk about that. This time, Donald Trump has even been calling out Vladimir Putin. At least 12 killed in Russia's deadliest attack on the capital this year. Lita Gadeva has more.
Yes, yes. Rescue workers pull out alive a man buried under the rubble. He survived, stuck under the ruins of a collapsed house for hours. In one of its worst attacks on Kyiv since the start of the war, Russia launched dozens of missiles and drones on the capital. According to Ukrainian officials, the attack killed more than 10 people and injured dozens, including children. The bombardments lasted about 11 hours.
This so-called truce that was during Easter, it was just to build up strength. And you can see how many strikes there were today, here and across Ukraine.
At the time of the attack, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was on an official trip to South Africa. He cut it short to return home.
Russia understands that Ukraine is standing, defending its rights, and is putting pressure on our people. It is also putting pressure on America. This is what I also link today's attack with.
In the aftermath of the attack, U.S. President Donald Trump scolded his Russian counterpart on Truth Social.
I am not happy with the Russian strikes on Kyiv. Not necessary and very bad timing. Vladimir, stop. 5,000 soldiers a week are dying. Let's get the peace deal done.
A rare condemnation by the U.S. president of the nearly daily Russian strikes on Ukraine. Kyiv's mayor declared Friday a day of mourning for the victims.
Daria Kalinyuk, tell us about your overnight. And there was more than 200 projectiles thrown where you are at the Ukrainian capital.
I was nearby, 100 kilometers nearby in Zhytomyr region. However, over our region, there were missiles flying to Kyiv. In Kyiv, there was my family members, and there were huge, very noisy explosions. Thanks God, my family was away from the place where missiles hit the residential building. And entire day, actually, we big news about new bodies being found under the rubble, and more people wounded. So it is the combined strike. It means that there were ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, Shahed drones fired simultaneously during the entire night. And it is that tactic which Russia learned how to use in order to penetrate our air defense. We know that one of the strikes were done by the missiles produced in North Korea. So it's just one more reminder that it's not just Russia, that actually there is a coalition of evil which is trying to destroy our country, and Russia has the support of other states.
This was the biggest overnight attack of 2025 by Russia on the capital. What was the message?
Russia wants to demoralize Ukraine and Ukrainians and force us to the capitulation, which some say is a peace deal. We don't believe that the peace deal, which is now in use, will bring actually peace and stop deaths of Ukrainians. We know that the goal of Russia is to break up the Ukrainian will to fight. However, we know what does Russian peace mean. It means that even if there is any truce, they are just preparing. They are preparing more missiles for such kind of combined drone and missile strikes. They are preparing their troops for further advancing in the front lines. But, you know, in the front lines, they can't advance significantly. Our armed forces know how to stop them. We are using some innovative techniques, drones, electronic warfare, which is actually produced in Ukraine by Ukrainian defense production companies. So therefore, they are trying to attack our civilian objects. It's not even about critical infrastructure. It's about residential buildings. A couple of weeks ago, they fired ballistic missiles in Kryvyi Rih straight to the playground with children killed and their family members killed. Almost every day, they are firing some glide bombs in the cities which are close to the border, like Sumy and Dnipro. So the death toll keeps going. Unfortunately, I think this message which they are sending is not only for Ukrainian people, it's for also American President Donald Trump.
Yeah, the American president who reacted negatively this time. We can cross now over to France 24's correspondent, Gulliver Cragg, who was in Kyiv overnight. Gulliver, I know that your sleep was interrupted. What was it? Something like 2 a.m. when this barrage began. We heard there just a moment ago, Daria Kalinyuk, tell us that the aim is to demoralize. The aim, you were telling me earlier, is perhaps also to show up where the Ukrainians are the most vulnerable. That is air defense.
Yes, absolutely. Air defenses is one of the things that the Ukrainians are the most dependent on the Americans for, Patriot systems in particular. Ukraine can't make any kind of equivalent of that. The Europeans have some things that are almost equivalent, but not as many. That would be a very big problem for the Ukrainians if they run out of ammunition for the Patriot air defense systems that they've got. I think there's been a European initiative to buy them from the Americans for Ukraine. So everything depends on just how far the Trump administration is prepared to go or planning to go in putting pressure on Ukraine and basically taking Russia's side in this war. I think that that's where we're at in terms of the declarations that we've had coming from the Trump administration in recent days. If that means that they might go so far as to not even let the European countries buy air defenses that Ukraine needs, then obviously they'd be in big trouble. And perhaps that's on quite a few Ukrainians' minds today when they see this very, very intense rocket attack. There are drone attacks almost every night in Kyiv, but this was a combined missile rocket attack with drones as well, and that's something that we haven't seen for several months, at least not on that scale in Kyiv. The reaction from most Ukrainians that you hear in the media, that you talk to, is, I think, that they believe that this is terror, that this is trying to break their spirit. I think that it's important to stress that it might just be errors in targeting. I think that we can't rule that out. But certainly, especially recently, there have been a lot of strikes on places where really there were no military targets evident and a lot of civilian victims. Today, media had access to the site very, very early. There was no restriction on filming and on wandering around there. If there had been any military targets in the vicinity, I think that there would have been. So I think most Ukrainians think that the Russians are trying to scare them into capitulation. And most Ukrainians, I think, are determined to be defiant. Most, but by no means all. And Vladimir Putin probably has a strategy of trying to divide the country. And there certainly are those. I think it's a minority, but I spoke to one of them this morning at the site where this ruined apartment block was. And he was basically saying, you know, the game's up. We're obviously going to lose. We can't do it. We better give in. There are some people who say that.
Oliver Cragg, many thanks for that live update from the Ukrainian capital. Let me begin with you, Jim Townsend, here on set. You heard Gulliver saying that, and you heard Daria saying that how much Ukraine has leveled up on the battlefield. They can produce a lot of the stuff themselves that keeps the Russians at bay. Air defense, though, that's a different story.
It's a different story. Everyone needs more air defense. That's always the cry you hear from the battlefield. And that's similar to what we're hearing now. And for the United States, unfortunately, we're short in terms of Patriot and the missiles used by Patriot. We're short ourselves. So that's a ready-made excuse if the president says, look, we can't support Ukraine anymore. We don't have enough ourselves. He's got a ready-made excuse. And I think what—
Would he do that?
I think he would. You know what? Sometimes he doesn't even need an excuse. I think the point is that what will the president do in the coming months when the Biden assistance, which is in the pipeline, that's going to Ukraine now, when that's over, is Trump going to put together his own assistance package, or is he going to say, no, I'm not going to do it? And if he doesn't do it, then that's going to be terrible for air defense because Patriot missiles would be part of his first package. So we'll have to see what he's going to do. It might be based on what Zelensky does with this agreement. There's a lot of factors going into Trump's mind on this.
All right. Among the sharpest reactions to those overnight strikes in the Ukrainian capital, that of France's president, Emmanuel Macron, speaking from Madagascar, part of an Indian Ocean tour.
I repeated to President Trump, whom I spoke with 2 days ago in the night, the only thing is for President Putin finally to stop lying. When President Putin speaks to American negotiators, he tells them, I want peace. When he speaks to the entire planet, he says, I want peace. But he continues to bomb Ukraine. He continues to kill in Ukraine. There is only one answer we expect. Does President Putin agree to an unconditional ceasefire? The Americans proposed it. The Europeans support it. President Zelensky said yes. If President Putin says yes, the guns fall silent and tomorrow, lives are saved. The international community has only one thing to do, and American anger should be directed only at one person, President Putin.
Jean de Glignasti, is that the right way to talk about this, what we saw last night?
Well, we support Ukraine till Zelensky changes his decision. But up to now, they have our full-fledged support. So we are indignant when they bomb the towns, the civil population, and there's something new, by the way, in Macron's declaration. He said that the priority is accepting the ceasefire, and after the ceasefire, we don't exclude some kind of concession or whatever, even territorial. But the first condition is accepting the ceasefire. That's, I would say, a slight opening.
Samantha de Benzer?
Well, the way I see it, I mean, President Macron and even President Zelensky have been open to the idea of Ukraine making some potential territorial concessions in the Donbas, not permanent concessions, but accepting that for now they cannot be reconquered by force. But what is very different from the position we're getting from the United States is that the United States seem to be wholeheartedly embracing the Russian point of view, wanting guarantees that Ukraine will never be into NATO, wanting a demilitarized Ukraine, wanting to recognize Crimea as being Russian. So this is much, much further from potentially suggesting that Ukraine may have to relinquish temporarily reconquering some of the territories, particularly in the east. So the way I see things today is the European position and that of President Macron, that of Keir Starmer, even the German position at this point with the new potential new chancellor, Friedrich Merz, are far, far away from the US position and getting further and further away. The US position is moving towards requesting that Ukraine make a total capitulation to Russia.
But what does an Emmanuel Macron, who's indignant, who calls Vladimir Putin a liar, have to back it up again if there's no longer those Patriot missiles, for instance?
Well, first of all, there are European alternatives to the Patriot missiles. You've got the SAMPT, Franco-Italian system. You've got the German IRIS system. Now, defense specialists, and I will refer to you, he would say that nothing is effective as a Patriot, but there are European alternatives. There is talk about some kind of European embryonic defense initiative to help Ukraine. One thing Europe can do tomorrow is help Ukraine protect its skies with air defense, with our planes, and help Ukraine and help the Black Sea be safer. That is something which the UK and France are talking about.
A no-fly zone?
Well, it's not being called that yet. But there are discussions to, first of all, reinforce European defense on Ukraine's border. But the way discussions seem to be going, I would not be surprised if we start openly, or if they start openly talking about that, because this is not, this is Europe's war. If Ukraine falls to Russia, and it will if the US withdraws completely and Europe cannot go in, then it becomes Europe's war. And Europe cannot afford to have Ukraine under Russian control at Europe's border. And the European leaders seem to finally be waking up to this.
Jim Townsend, Europe right now still has a weak hand. All of it was just described there, still in the future. Is it politically smart to call Vladimir Putin a liar at this point if you're Emmanuel Macron?
Well, I think we cannot say it enough that he's a liar. If the United States is going to be repeating his talking points, we've got to make sure the American people particularly are hearing other world leaders call him a liar and hearing that there seems to be this link between Moscow and what Trump is saying. So I think, calling him a liar, I think that's important. And I think also what's important is what my colleague just said in terms of European leaders and the European people understanding that this is their war and they have got to step it up. If the U.S., as it seems it's doing, is going to walk away, there's not a lot of time. And I think ideas like that air defense idea with European aircraft, that's got something to think about there.
That air defense idea, Jean-Duc Lignesti, what say you? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
You mean air defense of
Europeans in helping?
Well, I don't know. I just want to quote on this question of liar. I think Putin is a tactical liar, but a strategical truth teller. Because he's been saying for years, for 20 years, that the NATO case for Ukraine will start the war and so on. So he says the truth on the long run, but of course he's a tactical liar. I mean, he said he would not invade.
Truth in the long run. What is the truth?
The truth, I mean, Obama said himself in the Atlantic in August 1916. He said, "Be careful."
2016.
Yes, he said, "Be careful for Russia. Ukraine is existential, is crucial. And for us, it's a question of interest, a matter of interest." And I think it's obviously for Putin, the question is emotional.
Well, I think there's a big difference between something being emotional and something being existential. I mean, Ukraine is not existential to Russia. Russia will exist with or without Ukraine. It has the biggest landmass in the world. However, Putin has had this obsession with Ukraine, and there are many reasons to the obsession. And one obsession is he has this concept of Ukrainians and Russians being one people. They're the same in his point of view. And if Ukraine succeeds in its democratic development, that is saying that basically Russia might even be able to be democratic one day. And that is a real threat to Putin. That is the only threat that Putin, that Ukraine poses to Putin. Ukraine was not about to join NATO. I worked at NATO headquarters and I was looking after Ukraine-NATO relations in one of my jobs there. And the Americans were very clear that they did not really want Ukraine to join NATO because they saw their relationship with Russia as being that much more important. What happened is that the Americans finally decided that they could not let their foreign policy and NATO's foreign policy be dictated by Russia. So this kind of half-hearted solution was found in which there was, well, maybe Ukraine will join one day, but not yet, not now. That was the worst solution. It was waving a red flag at a bull, saying yes, but no, and not offering guarantees, but offering enough to give Putin an excuse. But this is an excuse for Putin. If Ukraine joined NATO, it would only be an existential threat for Putin if Putin attacked Ukraine. If Putin decided to never attack Ukraine and have friendly relations with Ukraine, it would not be a threat. NATO has no intentions of invading Russia, never had any intentions of invading Russia, and Ukraine never had any intentions of invading Russia. This is an excuse because Putin wants to recreate the former Soviet Union. Lucky for the three Baltic republics, they are now part of NATO, so it would be a lot more difficult for Putin to kind of dip his toe into, I don't know, Narva or some part of Latvia or Lithuania, as long as NATO's Article 5 is considered to be waterproof, which there are slightly doubts about that.
All right, we can talk about Article 5. We heard in that clip of the French president earlier reminding people that Volodymyr Zelensky has made a concession. He's for this unconditional ceasefire, which wasn't the case before. On a visit to South Africa, Zelensky reiterating that offer of an immediate and complete truce as precondition for talks with the Russians, an offer that his host seemed to endorse.
And we call upon all parties, both Russia and Ukraine, to ensure that there is a comprehensive ceasefire, an unconditional ceasefire, so that discussions and negotiations can start between the two countries.
Daria Kalinuk, Cyril Ramaphosa, he's the next chair of the G20. He is part of the BRICS, that club of emerging nations. He has had his issues of late with Donald Trump, particularly because there's over haggling over a Starlink contract for Elon Musk. But there you heard him seem to be giving a nod to Zelensky. Your thoughts on this call for a ceasefire?
There is already a ceasefire. Haven't you noticed it? I think there was agreement after the peace talk in Saudi Arabia that each of the parties will not strike into the critical infrastructure, energy infrastructure. Immediately after the agreement, I think it was in an hour or 2 hours when Russia broke the ceasefire and fired into Ukraine with cruise missiles, with repeat drones. I would like to remind that after that ceasefire about striking with missiles, there was a ballistic missiles fired at the playground in Kryvyi Rih. Kryvyi Rih is the city where President Zelensky is coming from. That massacre of children in the playground is horrible. So we don't believe that Russia can and want adhere to the ceasefire. We think that Russia is playing now with Americans, particularly with Donald Trump, promising some lucrative contracts and some economic benefits. We have not been talking about one of the things Russia pressures hard, it's lifting sanctions. Russia promises to America joint cooperation, economic cooperation. And for that, their sanctions have to be lifted, which I do hope Europe understands is coming, and Europe could be pressured coming from the United States to lead sanctions from Russia. And that will be horrible because it's not only reopening economic cooperation with Russia and boosting its war economy, allowing them to build more missiles. They are not that good in economy. There is a reason why they take North Korean ballistic missiles. Sanctions are biting. They are not great sanctions, but they are biting. It's hard to build more and more profound and complicated equipment. But if sanctions will be lifted, it will boost their war economy. And $300 billion of frozen Russian assets, most of which are kept in Europe, might get back to Russia instead of being used for defending Ukraine and Europe.
Jim Townsend, on this point, because we've heard Donald Trump over the last 48 hours talk up the idea of energy deals with Russia. Is this about making money, or is it because he wants a headline announcement of an agreement?
He wants both. Because, you know, his prestige is he was going to get an agreement in 24 hours. That didn't happen. But he feels he's got to deliver an agreement or he will be humiliated. He also very much wants to have the business deals with the Russians. He wants Ukraine out of the way so he could deal with Putin himself and do these deals. Part of the agreement, by the way, is that the U.S. is going to run that Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. And while we're going to run it, it'll belong to Ukraine with power going both to Russia and to Ukraine. But the U.S. is going to run it. And so we'll get a cut of that, too. So that's a business deal. That's, at the end of the day, that's really what's driving Trump, is he wants the rare earths as well, the minerals. Because, you know, the Russians have those, too. Not just Ukraine. So there's a lot there.
How does that play in Washington, as they say, inside of the Beltway? Do people agree with Donald Trump? Do they see this as something that is could be, pardon the pun, profitable?
The MAGA people do. His base do. The MAGA Republicans that are in the Congress do. The right-wing media does. But most of the country that are paying attention to this, most of the country look on this thing as some type of mafia deal. That all we seem to be doing is having security for hire. And if you can't pay for it, you're not going to get security. And there's this transactional administration is starting to really rub people wrong. So the people who like it are the MAGA people, not the rest of the country.
So, Dari Kalynuk, two quick questions. So why did Volodymyr Zelensky go to South Africa? And number two, he's going to have another trip later this week. He's scheduled to go to the Vatican for the Pope's funeral. Should he be sitting down with Donald Trump, or is it too early?
It's always important to talk, especially if it's a president of the United States. There is one more important thing President Zelensky mentioned during press conference, his South African leader. It's about Ukrainian kidnapped children. You know, there is about 20,000 Ukrainian children which Russia still is not returning back. And one of the conditions for any peace, sustainable peace, is actually to force Russia return our children. And I think this is something that President Trump also has to hear. And the most important thing, you know, President Zelensky reflects the will of Ukrainian people. When President Trump thinks that he has just to deal with President Zelensky, he is not understanding Ukraine well, because it's the Ukrainian people which know what Russia is, which already had peace with Russia. I would like to remind that the war has started in 2014, and we had ceasefire. We had so-called peace, and that peace led to Russia needing more time to prepare for the genocidal large-scale invasion, which has killed thousands of civilians, thousands of our best of the best people in the battlefield. So it means that next stage is to win more time, get business as usual, get more money to prepare for even larger attack, which will have the clear goal destroying Ukraine, but also attacking entire Europe. So therefore, I believe that Europe has to stick together. We are at the same plane. We are in the economy class. All other Europe is in the business class, but the fire is already in the plane. We have to act together And one of the very clear actions which Europe can do, Europe has the cards, as Donald Trump says, Europe has Russian money. If about $250 billion of frozen Russian money could be confiscated finally and being spent on being on building more SAMPTs and European alternative to Patriots, if more of this money could be spent on Ukrainian drones, Ukrainian air defense, if there could be more courage on sending actually European planes to patrol our skies together, we could protect both Ukrainian civilian objects, but also to hold the line and to stop Russian advancements with force. Force is the only language they understand.
Jean de Glignesti, the European have cards with all the frozen assets they're sitting on?
No. I think if we make a confiscation of all this money, it means that we renounce the euro as a reserve currency. It's very obvious. That's why most of the European countries don't want to freeze. Freeze, okay. Give the interest, okay, we already do that. But confiscated, no, no. It would be such a destruction of the international financiary order that I don't think we do that. I would add something about the sanctions. If the Americans lift the sanctions, I think Europe will follow sooner or later because our firms will be under heavy pressure. Our government will be under pressure from the French or German or British firms, because they don't want the Americans to take their place, their room in their place in the Russian market. We have to remind that France and Germany were the first investor in Russia. We lost, perhaps, there are different figures, but at least $100 billion because our investments were just left to the Russians. And if the there is in the American Chamber of Commerce in Moscow, there is a team which is dedicated to avoid the Chinese to take the European place. So they prefer to get back on the Russian market. And if we are not there, we'll lose the place.
Samantha de Bender.
I actually find that quite a shocking argument, I have to be really honest. I mean, here in Europe, we are faced with Russia. Russia, whose avowed aim is to weaken Europe. Russia, who is interfering in European elections, who is conducting sabotage operations on European soil, whose television propagandists threaten to nuke Paris, London, Berlin, and until recently Washington, until Washington changed sides. So I'm sure there are European businesses, just as there are American businesses, who only think about short-term gains and short-term money. First of all, do you really want to invest in a country where the rule of law is completely ignored, where it is the rule of the mob? And it is the rule of mob in Russia. I mean, I've lived there, I've worked there both as a diplomat and as a business person, and the rule of law does not exist. European companies who have managed to work in Russia have made a lot of money. They've also realized that it is a regime that has confiscated many of their assets once war in Ukraine started. So are European governments going to allow their companies to go into Russia and basically reward aggression, reward what has just been described as the deportation and disappearance of tens of thousands of Ukrainian children, and a country that is threatening European integrity? I think that, of course, companies, private companies, very often want to do business with scant regard to human rights and scant regards to security and to geostrategic issues. But I think European governments also have a duty at some point, if Europe really wants to support Ukraine, is to make sure that Russia does not get rich. The sanctions have not worked as well as one would have hoped, but they have worked. the United States doing these energy deals with Russia will bring more and more money into Russia's coffers. Money that will be done to what? To continue feeding the war machine that one day will turn against us.
What is certain is that there is this sense here in Western Europe, and we talked about it earlier when it came to the statements of Emmanuel Macron, that there's going to have to be compromise at some point. There's going to have to be... we heard the Polish president in an interview with Euronews say the same thing, the outgoing Polish president, who said that at some point there's going to have to be compromise on his social medium, Truth Social Wednesday, Donald Trump insisting Crimea was lost years ago and is not even a point of discussion. Russia seized the peninsula in 2014 in the wake of the Maidan Revolution and subsequently built a bridge over the Kerch Strait to link it to the mainland. Ukraine's president, who was combative this Thursday morning, pointing in a tweet to Trump's State Department policy in 2018 with a paper that was entitled at the time, Crimea is Ukraine. I could add to that, Jim Townsend, if you go on social media this Thursday, people have dug up a lot of speeches of then-Senator Marco Rubio saying exactly that. Of course, he's now the Secretary of State, and he's singing a different tune. Still, at the end of the day, does Crimea stay Russian?
This is one of those horrible things to have to say, but I don't see Ukraine taking Crimea back by force. So what do we do with this? We've talked about how horrible it would be for whether it's the West, for Europe, for the United States to walk away and reward Russia by giving them Crimea, rewarding them for their aggression by giving them Crimea. So the only thing I can see is if there isn't a whole giving over to the Russians of Crimea, that we're going to have to keep Ukraine in the fight until such time as that we can get to some kind of agreement that has more justice to it. But this agreement right now has no justice. It's total compromise by Ukraine. It's total giving over of Crimea to the Russians. It's totally it's rewarding them. We've got to say no to this agreement and buy time to come up with something else, because this one right now I think is a humiliation for Ukraine, and the lives that were lost would be in vain if we gave Crimea over to the Russians without something to counterbalance that. This, I think, this does not justice to those lives lost in the past number of years in fighting.
No, I think there's a really big difference between the United States recognizing that Crimea is Russian and having a kind of bide your time approach, not recognizing that Crimea is Russian, accepting that it'll be very difficult for Ukraine to regain Crimea militarily. But what does Donald Trump want to do by making Crimea Russian? To have a Crimea lago, develop some kind of wonderful resort? Because that's what he'll be able to do. If the United States recognizes that Crimea is Russian, what's to stop, Steve Witkoff's real estate conglomerate going in there and building luxury hotels? That is what is really at stake here, and it's actually really serious.
Daria Kalinuk, you tweeted this morning, Crimea is Ukrainian. But let me ask you, honestly speaking, are there those around you who are resigned saying, look, at the end of the day, we may have to give it up?
Crimea is Ukraine. It's in our constitution. We are not going to change our constitution. Whatever deal Zelensky is pressured to sign, he can't sign alone. He will need the parliament and change the constitution. There is no appetite in Ukraine to admit that we are giving up part of our territory, even an inch of Ukrainian territory. Because if we give them an inch, they will come for 10 inches and they will come for entire territory. If we admit Crimea is not Ukrainian, is Russian, then what will happen to Kherson, Donetsk, Lugansk, Kharkiv region, Zaporizhia region? Their appetite is not stopping. And admitting Ukraine, admitting Crimea is Russian is just redefining international law. And I agree with another speaker that Most likely behind the scenes, America admitting Crimea is Russian is just doing business. Crimea is a beautiful island, and the shelf of the Black Sea has a lot of lucrative natural resources. I'm afraid that there might be some hidden natural resources and minerals deal between Russia and America. I wouldn't be surprised about that.
Now, Russia's president getting set to welcome Donald Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, on Friday. Jean de Grignas, Steve, Vladimir Putin the last time reportedly offered to halt his invasion of Ukraine at the current front line. And sources tell the Financial Times even relinquished claims there. So, in other words, we've grabbed some land. Let's just leave it at that. That was, of course, that's one idea being floated. What do you make of Steve Witkoff being, again, no Europeans in the room, just no Steve Europeans. Witkoff and Vladimir Putin?
Well, first remark, I think Zelensky outsmarted the Russians in Jeddah in March by accepting the ceasefire. And it was very clever from him. And at that time, the Russians were on the defensive position and they had to, well, to try to say yes, but, and so on, etc. But now, this time, I think Zelensky did not outsmart the Russians. And the Russians are in a strong position because it's Zelensky who is reputed refusing the peace agreement proposed by the Russians. That's a very important point. The second element is that we are talking about Crimea, but in fact, what is at stake with the American withdrawal, it's the existence in itself of Ukraine as an independent and pro-Western state. So we are sort of discussing about Crimea, but the stake is far bigger, and we have to compromise with this in mind.
Jim Townsend?
No, I agree. It's a what Zelensky has done, though, by saying this time around that I'm not going to take this agreement, which I don't blame him for doing, as I said. I don't think he has any other choice. He's putting himself in a situation that he's giving Trump an excuse to walk, because Trump will just clap his hands and go, okay, that's it. Zelensky, you have been too hard to deal with. I'm going to move on to other things. I'm going to leave it up to the Europeans to work this out, but we're out of this, and we're not going to provide you any assistance, by the way. And so that's my fear, is in the next 24 hours.
What else could Zelensky have done?
He had no good place. He loses whatever decision he makes. If he says, okay, I'll go along with this, I will turn over Crimea, I will give all these concessions, he would have no other option but to resign. After that, no other option. He would certainly lose his place in Kyiv. But he has said instead of that, he said, we're not going to do it. He is signing off from U.S. assistance and U.S. talk and all that type of thing. That's gone now. And he's going to leave it up to the Europeans to help him here. And Europe's going to have to step up.
I think it's really important just to remind ourselves what's being proposed here. Russia is generously agreeing to not lay claim to the entirety of the Luhansk, Donetsk, Zaporizhia and Kherson regions, which it only partially occupies, although it does occupy more than 99% of the Luhansk region. It's basically saying, I'm not going to go further if you allow me to keep what I have. Now, that is not a negotiation. That is not a gift. That is a form of gaslighting. It's like saying,
gaslighting.
Hey, yeah. I'm going to continue raping your wife and daughter, and if you let me continue raping them, I just won't rape the second
it's
daughter.
It's Czechoslovakia in 1960.
Zelensky do under these circumstances?
We're going to have to leave it there, unfortunately, because we're going to have to go to the White House. I want to thank you, Samantha DeBender, and I want to thank Jean de Grignas, Jim Townsend, Daria Kalianouk for being with us from Kyiv. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.